Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Find them on Blog Talk Radio this Friday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And for this show, you'll be able to hear my interview with Aubrey Ashburn, and that will be on Thursday, this August the 9th, and I hope you will join us. And you can find the Conservative Conversation in two ways. One, if you're on Facebook, you can go to the search engine on Facebook and type in Newt Now as one word, and that is NEWTNOW, and you'll find a plethora of good shows for anyone's flavor. You have Charlotte Dively's show, which is Pray USA, which is, as the subject, I mean, as the title suggests, is about, you know, a prayer session for America. And that is on Monday through Friday from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. And you also could find Samuel Samford's show on the Conservative Conversation on the page. And that is from 10 p.m. till midnight, sometimes 1 a.m. And all these times are Eastern times. And then from 10 until 12, you have Mark Prasik's live video chat. And one thing that you could do is go in there and see how they do their show prep, and the audience can actually even participate in what is going to be covered in the second installment of this show, which runs from midnight to 2 a.m. So you can jump on their show, send a video that you would like to see played on the second segment, and then hop back into Samuel Samford's show. That would be great. If you have any questions on that, just put it in the chat, or you can go ahead and call in, and I would be more than happy to discuss it with you and tell you how that works. But there's another way you can also find the Conservative Conversation and links to all those shows, is you can go to this site's webpage, which you will find on the homepage of Bard's Logic Political Talk, in which you can also find a button that says follow. So if you like the show, both listeners live and listeners in the archive, just click on that follow button, and you'll be following the show. And while that does give a little email reminder to that the show's going to be coming on, maybe some updates, but I don't follow myself, so I really don't know. I'd have to ask somebody exactly what they get for following, but I believe, since I do follow other shows, I just get email updates of when the show's going to be on. So, or maybe other scheduled updates. I'll look more into that if anyone would like me to. And so what I like to do is go on to what tonight's topic is. Well, I did some research today, and if the election was held today, Obama would win in the general election, and with Obama having 315 electoral college to Romney with just 233. Now, the analysis came, when I did the analysis, I used a plus or minus 3-4% margin of error between the two. And so this is, of course, not information that you're going to hear from the mainstream media. And the reason I don't think you'll hear that there's such a gap is because they want people to think there could be hope for Romney, because they do actually want, the mainstream media and the liberals actually want to run against Romney in the general election, you know. And who they, you know, so, excuse me, so you won't hear it from the mainstream media, and you also won't hear it from the so-called conservative media either, such as Fox News, and I spell that F-A-U-X News, and Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh or anything of that nature, because they have been propping up and shilling for Mitt Romney for a long time, who, of course, is the establishment and the RNC's, chosen pick, okay, that was redundant, chosen candidate. So you won't hear them on either, but here on blog Bard's Logic Political Talk, you will find such information that you won't find in those realms. Now, before I go to the link, I want to go back to the chat and see if anyone's got anything in there. And I see some links, which I will refer to later. So, also, what we may hear tonight, and then I'll go into the counts, is we may hear an update on the lawsuit for the RNC, in which is the federal question on the RNC rule on the unbounding to delegates. And that has been in the courts for the past couple of days, and we may get an update, we may get an update on that later on this evening, which I hope we do. Also, I'm hoping someone will come in to discuss and promote a petition, I believe, that's going out to the RNC, because there is talk out there about Newt Gingrich not being invited to speak at the convention. Now, the reason I think that is the case is I think they don't. Romney would not want Newt Gingrich to speak at the convention, because once you have a Newt Gingrich speaking at the convention and, you know, talking about conservative ideas and ideals and bold solutions, then it's really going to be very evident to all those Republicans watching the convention that the true pick for the nominee would be Newt Gingrich and not Mitt Romney. And I believe the same thing could be said to be true about Ron Paul, maybe not to the extent of Newt Gingrich, and I am a Newt Gingrich supporter, but if he also would have a Ron Paul speak, Ron Paul would be speaking of libertarian ideals and ideas, in which something another thing that Mitt Romney could not articulate, because Romney is not a constitutional conservative. And the two people that are closest to constitutional conservatives is Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul. So you have a constitutional conservative, and then you have a libertarian, which they're also, a constitutional focus. So that being said, hopefully we hear them come in and talk about that tonight, so we can get information and promote the petition to the RNC to let Newt Gingrich speak, which is ridiculous, and that he's not been invited yet, and that's something we can cover later. But at this time, I will go to the main crux of tonight's show. It is right now, as things stand, if the election was held today, as I said, Obama would win in the general election 315 Electoral College to Romney's 223. Well, people would be like, oh, well, that's well out. He could come back. Romney could come back. No, I don't think so. And I'll explain that why. I'll explain why in a little bit. But I want to use this information for people to hear, for the public, for them to digest, is that to illustrate once more and bolster the evidence that a brokered convention is very necessary if we are to defeat and have a nominee that will defeat Barack Obama, because Mitt Romney is proving that he is not it. And I think one of those reasons is, one is, and I'll just give an example before going to these polls, is that he had such a lackluster response, as he does with many of his other responses, in like his whole campaign. And the issue of Chick-fil-A and on how that, when he was asked, he just plainly said, well, that's not part of my campaign. And also about the Islamic Brotherhood, when there was questions about them, and I guess with the possibility of there be some connection between the Islamic Brotherhood and some government institutions or organizations. But Romney, in normal Romney fashion, did not address that by stating that those two issues were not a part of his campaign. And of course, in my opinion, and those who'd like to chime in, either in chat or call in, would like to, you know, debate the opinion. But I think this opinion is that I think that the reason why Romney is not going to speak on that, one, because of his record, and two, because of his fear to offend anyone. And we know, you know, how that worked in 2008 when McCain wouldn't say anything bad about Obama because he was afraid he was going to offend anyone. But that being said, I'm going to the map. And we're talking, you know, I said earlier people might be like, oh, well, you know, there's still time for Romney to come back. Well, the normal margin of error when it comes to doing these polls on when he's going to take it is 3 to 4 percentage points, and that's why I used that that mathematics, okay, that gap. Now, what I did is in figuring out the Electoral College is that if they were within the 3 or 4% margin or tied, then what I would do is I would look at the history of the state and who they went for, whether it was the Republican or the Democrat. And so if historically in the past 10 elections, 10 presidential elections, they historically voted for a Republican, I gave that to Romney. If the state historically went for the Democrat, I gave that to Obama. Okay? So that's how that went. And then, of course, if they were above the 4% mark, 5% or above, I gave the person who had the higher poll numbers state to that. And the ones that really stuck out is Virginia and Colorado were tied. And so I gave Virginia to Romney because Virginia historically has gone to Republicans, and I've given Colorado to Obama because they have historically gone more to Democrats. Now, in South Carolina and North Carolina, Obama was plus 3. Okay. So what I did is I also went, but Obama was plus 3 in South Carolina and North Carolina, but to give Romney the benefit of the doubt, I looked at the history of North Carolina and South Carolina, and historically they go for Republicans, so I gave Romney those two states. Now, New Hampshire, which was plus 4, it's plus 4 for Obama, but through the history of, believe it or not, of New Hampshire, it looks like New Hampshire also goes for Republicans in the last 10 elections. So I gave New Hampshire to Romney, even though that Obama and all three of those examples is in the lead. But I gave those states to Romney because of the history of who these states voted for, whether it was Republican or Democrat. So now I have Iowa, where right now Obama is plus 5 in Iowa. Okay? So anything plus 5 or over, I gave the state to the person who was ahead. And so Iowa went to Obama. So going down the list, you also have New Mexico, who is 5% for Obama, so Obama got New Mexico. Nevada right now is 5% over Mitt Romney, so I gave it to him. And Minnesota is 5% above Romney, so I gave it to Obama. Now, here's some important states to know. I mean, they're all important. Every state is important. But you hear continually about the swing states and Michigan. And as of right now, these are Epic, MRA, and Quinnipiac polls that I'm getting this information from. So they're not just polling institutions that you have not heard of. Okay? And these are polls that have been, averaged throughout the state. Michigan is plus 6 to Obama. So I gave Michigan to Obama. Florida, Obama is 6 points above Mitt Romney. So I gave Florida to Obama. Ohio right now is plus 6 for Obama. So I gave Ohio to Obama. Okay? Now, I glanced at something today from one of Fox News contributors, Dick Morris, and he was analyzing the polls. However, that's not – I mean, Fox News is not independent. We've learned that. They've been shilling for Romney. So, and you can look at, all these polls and pretty much get whatever you want. I understand that can be possible. That's why I go to the source that I have, which is 270towin.com, okay? because it averages all these polls of polling institutions that people are well aware of. Okay? So, and then people can just go and check it out themselves. You know, it's right there. It's very interactive. That's why I use that map. So there we have it, folks. Now, 6 points is a pretty good spread. Is it impossible to come back? No. However, we all know that after that gavel drops in Tampa, you are going to have so many negative ads going against Romney and the Republicans, especially to Romney himself, vetting his record, vetting the possibilities of what happened during Bain Capital and Damon Corporation. Okay, those are going to be included. And other issues, his record and how he truly, his record and Obama's record is pretty much the same. That'll be vetted. And all those negative ads, do you think those numbers are going to go up? Or are those numbers going to go down? Those numbers for Romney are going to go down. And then, of course, the poll numbers go up for Obama. So actually, the longer this campaign goes on, the worse it is for Romney. Thus, if he's not winning now, who's to say that he would win in November, because it's only going to get worse for him as time goes by with all the negative ads that can be put against him. And we rail against negative ads. We say how horrible it is, they are. But the fact of the matter remains, negative ads work. They work. And that's why I think a broker convention would be good, because all this time, from the time that the other candidates suspended the campaign, the Obama administration has been putting negative ads out on Romney, and the longer you have negative ads out, the more effect they're going to have. Romney's going to keep screwing up like he has been, you know, in London, as he has been with being timid on his responses to the Chick-fil-A incident or situation, and also to Reverend Wright, timid on that, and timid on, you know, other issues. Okay, that we can definitely discuss and people can bring up later on. Okay, so it's only going to get worse. So a broker convention, in a way, can surprise the Democrats and also give them less time, thus less effectiveness of their negative ads. So see how this is turning out, where a broker convention would be good. And I'll bring up more about the history of broker conventions. But right now, I would like to refer back to the chat and see if anybody's got the chime in on what they've heard. And I see that at this point, people are just getting in and absorbing the information. And that's okay. It's good to absorb it before making contact. Think about it. Mull over it. You know, ponder what the possibilities are, because you're not hearing, and it may come to surprise to hear this, because people are not hearing this on the mainstream media, and they're not hearing this on, you know, the so-called conservative media, because the mainstream media, they want Romney. They want Obama to run against Romney, because he is indeed the weakest candidate to go up against Obama. And, of course, Obama wants to run against them in the media, you know. And then you have your so-called conservative media that's not going to put it out, because they're so invested, and I would even say money-wise, literally invested, I would speculate, okay, in Romney, because they've been shilling for him as well, that they're not going to put that kind of information out. So with those two things, that's why it could be very well a surprise for people to hear that. Now, people have been asked, well, why are we seeing, you know, negative ads against Romney now? Well, if Romney is not indeed the nominee, well, the reason why we're not hearing it, we are hearing the negative ads, or seeing the negative ads, is that the Obama administration wants to keep the narrative alive that that Romney is the official nominee. We know he is not the official nominee until after that gavel drops at the convention, which is only, 19 days away, which is very important because not only does the conservatives and the Republican Party depend on a broker convention, I would contend that America does as well, because Obama, another 4 years of Obama will be disastrous. That's why we're pushing so hard for a broker convention, because we know that once Mitt Romney is vetted and it's shown that his liberal record is no different than Romney's, then the important independents, and everyone's important in their vote, what we're talking about is a voting bloc. The independents, when they see Romney's true record, and it will be put out there by the mainstream media and the Obama campaign, then they're not going to see the stark difference that they're going to need to see, okay, in order to vote against the incumbent, basically. And they will not. Historically, they have not. But I have someone who's called in, and we will let them chime in. And I do not recognize the area code, so I just put up the rules for the show when calling in, and this is for the chat as well. I have just two rules. One is stay polite, civil conversation, even if you disagree with me, just civil. And two, no profanity to be said. And if I hear either one of those, I will just summarily just drop you from the call. So, be civil and I understand heated debate. That's fine. But civility. Heated debate is fine. No F-bombs and no GDs or anything of that nature. So I'm not saying that the person's definitely going to do it. Just I always tell the people who are the area codes I'm not as familiar with those little roles. And without further ado, I will let 571 in. Yes, 571, thank you for calling in the Bard's Logic Political Talk. How are you?
I'm well, and there's two things that I have rules. One is I will use foul language, and two, I'm going to look for a contentious, violent debate with you.
Okay, Rex.
Kidding,
how are you doing? I wasn't familiar with the 571. I'm used to a different one, but that's okay.
I've got alternate numbers, but anyway, I'm doing well, and I agree with the point you just made. I think some people, even people that are aware of the idea of a brokered convention, are having trouble understanding why, this seeming sudden fight between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney is occurring. There's the whole contention with Harry Reid, and there's the issue with release your tax returns and all this, and it's kabuki theater. It's because they don't want you to hear peep one out of what's going on in the Ninth Circuit Court with 400 plus delegates for Ron Paul and a lawsuit. And they certainly don't want to hear about anybody else who's thinking that, we'd like to see Newt Gingrich, or there's people who want Sarah Palin, or people who want somebody else. It's just, they don't want you to hear it.
Right, because they want to keep it the narrative that Romney is the official. And I've been saying it for quite a long time. They've been trying to put the inevitability of a Mitt Romney nomination, even in the very beginning portions of the primary.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you're right. That's exactly what they did.
And, one thing that, people know is if you hear the term or you hear the phrase, if you hear something long enough, you start to believe it. And I think that's what they've done with, the inevitability of Romney. And not only just the inevitability of Romney, Romney is the only candidate that can beat Obama. Well, it's starting to show. I don't know how long you've been in Rex, but I've been showing the Electoral College count and how currently Obama's blowing Romney away. And if at this point in time his poll numbers are down, it's only going to get worse for him once he's truly vetted by not only the media but by the the campaign, the Obama campaign as well, it's just going to get worse for him. So these numbers we're seeing, even in the swing states like Florida and Ohio, right now Obama is up by 6%, and it's only going to get worse the longer these attack ads are going to be able to take place.
Yeah. Yeah, and generally speaking, a candidate gets a convention bump, that's what they call it. And the reason that term and that phrase exists is for the sole reason that, say, in the last 30, maybe 40 years, conventions have been prolonged 4 or 5 day campaign commercials. So your candidate, the presumptive nominee, comes out of that convention with a bump because he just basically got a lot of free ad time. Because remember, the campaign doesn't pay for the convention, the party does. So, and the media reports on it. So that's why McCain got a bump, and I would argue that McCain's convention bump in 2008 was predominantly due to the excitement caused by Sarah Palin and the fantastic speech that she gave.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's the only time that McCain was ahead of Obama. And it'll be the only time, potentially, that Mitt Romney is. However, since we know the rules, and more of us know the rules this time around than any time, I would argue, in the last 40 years, and you have delegates that understand these things more than any time in the last 40 years, it's not going to be Romney. Now, in the remote chance that it is Romney, it's not likely to happen as smoothly as they would like. And so that campaign commercial presumptive nominee bump is not likely to be there. But even if Romney were to narrow that gap in those swing states to 3 points as opposed to 6, you know, within the margin of error, it won't last but 2 weeks, because remember, the Democrats have their convention 2 weeks later.
Right.
And then it's over.
Exactly. And I just see with all the other negative negative ads and how his record's really going to be vetted then on how liberal and how close to Obama's record he really is. And through my understanding, everything that Romney has done on the state level, Obama's pretty much done on the national level.
Yep, that's fairly true. Very true. I know we've talked about this before, but there's this perception that the guy is going to govern according to the platform of the party of which, you know, the team jersey he wears. So Romney wears an elephant jersey, so he's going to be an elephant. Well, you know, if you trade quarterbacks with the team, you know, whenever I talk football, I talk in terms I understand. So Washington Redskins, Dallas Cowboys, right? So, if the Cowboys and the Skins trade quarterbacks in a deal, right, well, that quarterback is now beholden to the new team. Well, that's a job, and it doesn't mean much other than I get paid and, you know, I'm a good quarterback. So they'll play just fine for the other team. This is politics. This is serious. This involves people's lives. This isn't just about getting paid and endorsements and, you know, winning the Super Bowl. This is serious. So if you got the team jersey on only because that was the available jersey when you were running in 1994 to be senator in your state, then you really don't play for that team. Mitt Romney does not play for our team. He never has. And even though his language has potentially become severely conservative, his views have not. I mean, the fact is, you have to ask yourself, you know, look, some people do change, and they change parties for legitimate reasons. You know, keep in mind, Ronald Reagan was an FDR New Deal Democrat, and then when the New Deal went a different direction that he had been sold it in the first place, and he found that, you know, he said that I didn't leave the Democratic Party, they left me. He became a Republican because he realized the party that he was in was no longer standing for the values that he believed in. Well, so he became, you know, a Republican. Well, Mitt Romney was a Democrat in 1992 voting for basically, you know, Paul Tsongas, who was in the primary, not even Bill Clinton, who was kind of a nobody, he was a dark horse guy. Voted very, very left Democrat. And then 2 years later, he suddenly, you know, found his Republican calling with no discernible reason why he shifted parties other than the fact that the two slots for Senate were occupied by John Kerry and Ted Kennedy. So if he wanted to be a senator from the state in which he lives, which is the only way he could be. He just had to change teams. So it's the same way that Arlen Specter did. You know, it's a political decision, not a decision of principle, and that's the fundamental problem. People are thinking that somehow Romney has become a conservative, and somehow he's a Republican. The guy's not, and like you said, his record in Massachusetts clearly talks about how liberal he is, and even his recent actions while he's on this campaign trail talk about the same thing. So how do you beat a guy who's a relatively popular incumbent when your policies are exactly the same, there's no discernible difference, except that you're not liked? I mean, 70% of Republican voters are not pro-Romney. So even if they hold their nose and vote for him, are they going to work for him? Are they going to go knocking on the doors? I just don't see it.
Yeah, I've got it. We mentioned earlier tonight, where I mentioned earlier tonight, about the lack of a real response to the Chick-fil-A. I always get that Chick-fil-A. I don't know why
Chick-fil-A.
I can't get that.
Chick-fil-A.
Incident. And he didn't really say much about it. I'd like to know what your take on his, you know, why you think he had such a lack of response to that situation, that incident.
Well, because basically in the popular media, that whole Chick-fil-A event was a controversial topic because people misconstrue it. It's in the media, they try to paint it as National Day of Intolerance, meaning that, you know, first of all, even I just was casually speaking to someone who happens to have been and is likely to be an Obama voter. Very frank discussion. And she said, well, you know, what about that Chick-fil-A protest? And I'm like, protest? What protest? There was no protest. Was anybody holding signs outside of Chick-fil-A and protesting? It wasn't a protest. People just went there and bought goods from Chick-fil-A. You know, well, it's because they were showing their intolerance. Well, what intolerance do you show by patronizing a restaurant that can't force you to go buy their goods? It's not, I mean, there's no protest involved, and there's no intolerance involved. The fact that Chick-fil-A operates their corporate culture and their franchise culture on Christian values. They're closed, you know, every Sunday. They specify themselves as a Christian company. And so, you know, that being the case, you have to ask yourself what that means, and it clearly, you know, has an issue with so-called gay marriage, and one of the executives, I think he was the president, expressed that as a personal view, okay, as his personal view, which, guess what, the First Amendment, it lets you say that, just the same as someone can express that they're for gay marriage as a personal view. And it's controversial because it's deemed to be something against homosexual-leaning persons, which it's not. It's an issue of what is the definition of marriage, not on what your personal conduct might be, just that's not what they believe. And so it became a controversial topic in that regard. And if you're a tepid rhino Republican, you like to stay away from controversy. That's what they do. They shy away from that stuff. So Mitt Romney didn't comment on it because he didn't want to be painted with that brush.
But do you also think that maybe his record had something to do with it? His record on the gay marriage issue?
Well, I mean, if he's really trying to woo the Republican vote, which is not necessarily Christian and it's not necessarily social conservatives. There are people in the Republican Party who don't share those particular views. But if you want to win in the GOP, you have to attract enough of your base, which happens to share those views overwhelmingly, that he could have, you know, said something in order to attract that base. The only problem is that that base knows a liar when they hear one, and his record in Massachusetts vis-a-vis so-called homosexual rights and the rights to redefine marriage are very, very liberal. And actually, if you know, obviously we can't get into all the details on the show, but if anyone's curious, there's a great place to go, and it's very detailed and well-cited. It's massresistance.com, M-A-S-S, resistance, one word, .com, and you'll find a lot of information there about the specifics of Mitt Romney's record in Massachusetts, including this particular issue. So I find him being quiet about it just the same reason that John Boehner did not want Newt Gingrich to be the Speaker of the House back in the 90s. They don't like controversy. They like to fly under the radar and keep their positions without causing too many waves. And the people that went to patronize Chick-fil-A, and I was one of them, on August 1st in support of the company's position, wasn't so much in support of the fact that they support traditional marriage and are not in favor of redefining something which you can't redefine, which is marriage. But the very simple fact that in a free country, you can spend your money wherever you want, and a merchant can accept your money if they want, and no one has anything to say about it. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. This cultural Marxism, called political correctness these days, is dampening mm-hmm. our conversation. And the fact is that issues of controversy are supposed to be debated in the public square for the very reason that if we're wrong about something, we want someone to provide a cogent reason and a logical argument as to why, so I can reconsider my view. And if I'm not wrong, I want that to be held out publicly so that we can move on and have a better country. There's the idea of silencing debate and discussion and free expression is so un-American that it is why our political process is the way that it is, this kind of selection by acclamation by our elite leaders, because they don't want to have these conversations. That's the whole point of this country, isn't it?
Yeah, in part. Why have a First Amendment right if you cannot exercise it?
Right. Yeah. I think people don't understand what the First Amendment means. I mean, so it covers a lot of things, but I'm assuming here you're talking specifically about free speech. Well, the First Amendment is designed to protect free speech, which you already have, from the government taking it away from you, which governments have usually done, because if you speak against what the popular language is or the current power is, then that's when you get in trouble. It was specifically designed to protect political speech that criticizes the current political order. That's the whole point.
Well, and from my understanding, I lost my train of thought there, is that, you know, the guy said something, you know, it's his own personal, and then there was a kind of an uproar. I didn't follow it real closely. I know the basics, you know, of it, but they were just talking about, you said, First Amendment rights, you know, and to my understanding, wasn't there talk about mayors not trying to keep Chick-fil-A's from being opened up in their state, or I'm sorry, their city?
Correct. I think it was Mayor Rahm Emanuel, in your face, Alinskyite, former Obama machine guy, in Chicago, and I also I believe the other one might have been Philadelphia. I'm not sure about that. But, yeah, they were saying because of Chick-fil-A's intolerant views, we're not going to allow them to open up a restaurant in our city. Well, that's kind of odd if you actually believe that we still live in America, because if whoever owned that particular piece of property that Chick-fil-A was either purchasing or leasing, sold it or rented it to Chick-fil-A, then they have every right to operate no matter what the mayor thinks. I mean, he has no say-so, because it's
private property. Right, because, I mean, that's, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Wasn't that at one point the pursuit of property?
That's a great point, and it's kind of a weird point also because of certain erroneous prejudice views that some of our founders held, but they still managed to write documents that transcend their own prejudice. But in the Commonwealth of Virginia, it was George Mason, who basically is the guy who first drafted what inspired and later became our Bill of Rights. I can't quote it specifically, and I don't have it in front of me. I have taillights in front of me, but it says being sovereign creatures of God, we have a right to life, to liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what it was. In other words, you have a right to your own personal property, first being your body, your land, your home, and whatever else you acquire through either being the first to get there and lay claim to it, or to properly acquire it from somebody else in trade. And that was a very important thing, because most people came here to these shores from Europe, a very difficult journey to a relatively dangerous and hard to manage place, in order to have religious freedom and to have property that is theirs by which they could cultivate it for whatever purpose provided them with their happiness. Now, obviously, because of certain compromises made at the drafting of the Constitution, where African slaves were, for the purpose of apportionment, it wasn't necessarily a denigration upon the person, it was just for apportionment of delegates, were considered like two-thirds of a person. And it was because clearly you're defining property rights, pursuit of happiness, liberty, freedom, yet you have enslaved a population that you have forcibly brought into your shores to use. So it's kind of immoral and distasteful. And many of the founders, who were even slave owners themselves, were actually against the institution. And unfortunately, they hadn't quite gone far enough to correct that problem at the time of the drafting of the Constitution. So I think for that reason, they eliminated property from the document, because, you know, that's a serious issue. When you're considering another human person property and you say, I have a right to property, that's pretty much kind of
right.
A moral cover to a very immoral idea. And something that we needed to work out, and the Founding Fathers were hoping that, you know, through the compromise of these 13 sovereign states, that they would form this confederation and they would work out this problem peaceably over time. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. We ended up with 600,000 dead Americans in a war, not necessarily over that issue, but that was one of the prevailing issues. But nevertheless, the idea of property is very, very important, because if you don't have the right to private property, then what do you have a right to? You don't have a right to your paycheck. You don't have a right to your home. You don't have a right to your food. You don't have a right to cultivate your land. You have no right for self-determination if you don't own property. You're living in either at the pleasure of your lord in a fiefdom, or the king to whom you're subject. Or you're living in a communist or socialistic society whereby, you know, everybody owns everything. None of those work. They don't work.
Yeah, and these are issues that you brought up that Romney could have very well, you know, segued the way you did into those very topics that could have worked well for him. Now, Newt Gingrich, on the other hand, would definitely have been someone who would have addressed, you know, those issues. And I think, you know, because you've seen him talk before. I mean, look at the controversy about, and I also want to bring this point in, and we mentioned it earlier, about the Muslim Brotherhood and the, you know, fiasco. No, I wouldn't say fiasco, but, you know, it definitely, you know, made its way to the Sunday news shows. So, you know, and about Michelle Bachmann and Newt Gingrich was talking in defense of her, per se, in a roundabout way. He was defending her. But he was also bringing up, you know that point that, see how he used that situation, and he actually made something of it. You know, he made something in a way to promote, you know, conservative ideas and ideals, and he's got the ability to do that, which Mitt Romney does not. And, you know, that's another way that Romney could have done something to bolster his gravitas, maybe, or you know, being presidential. But once again, he missed the boat, and I think that through Newt Gingrich would not have missed that opportunity. And I think these opportunities are very important to have. And that brings us back, you know, to the broker convention and why he would be a stronger candidate. And with those electoral college counts and that I've read off earlier, you know, I think that illustrates that.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I mean, Newt Gingrich is a conservative. Newt Gingrich believes what he says, and he can tie it all in together because it's part of his worldview. Mitt Romney has a different worldview, and one that, were he to articulate honestly and share with the rest of us, we'd probably be extremely uncomfortable, and he wouldn't have gotten very far. So he has to obfuscate, and he doesn't share these views, and he's only able to run as a Republican if he's scripted and uses the proper buzzwords and the focus tested approved language. He can't off the cuff come up with this stuff, which is precisely why Mitt Romney is frightened to death of an open convention, because he would actually have to defend himself as the nominee and make a case for why he's better than Ron Paul or Newt Gingrich or Sarah Palin or anybody else. And he can't do that.
And I would even say that is part and parcel one of the reasons why that Newt Gingrich has not gotten an invitation to speak at the convention, because I think he would really show up, as it were, Romney, if he was talking, and then people would be like, oh, man, who did we just get ready to nominate, or who did we nominate, or who could we nominate? I mean, and then they would want to switch gears and vote for, you know, Newt Gingrich, because, as you pointed out, Newt Gingrich can articulate conservative, you know, the conservative values, which, frankly, let's be honest, that's what this country is based on.
Mm-hmm.
And Mitt Romney cannot, because it's not at Mitt Romney's core.
Correct. I don't think he has a core. He's got ambition. He wants the trappings of office and the levers of power, but he doesn't have a core. He doesn't have a set of core beliefs, politically speaking. You know, he doesn't have a set of core beliefs. It's just about basically the will to power. That's what it is for him. And you're absolutely right. I think that the idea is that we're the so-called alternate media, are not the
right.
only ones who have been studying the history of conventions. We're not the only ones that have listened to Barbara Haney so clearly explain how this is actually the norm for
right.
Political nominations. They are too, and the one I think that they particularly studied is the 76 RNC convention. The RNC convention that basically, essentially by acclamation, nominated Gerald Ford, who in typical Ford fashion made the kind gesture but the terrible political mistake of asking Ronald Reagan to speak impromptu at the convention after he was nominated, and Ronald Reagan, who had no prepared notes and no prepared speech and wasn't scheduled to talk, came down and spoke and gave such a fantastic conservative speech that the delegates just looked at each other and were like, oh, crap, we nominated the wrong guy. And so Mitt Romney learned that lesson, and his team learned that lesson. If you let Gingrich speak, even if it's after he gets the nomination, people
right.
will be like, well, uh-oh, what did we just do?
Exactly. Exactly. And I've got a gentleman we're both very familiar with and really does not need any introduction, but I'll do a short one. And I've got here on the line Samuel Samford, who, of course, has his Blog Talk radio show, another part of the conservative conversation. And that show is on Blog Talk Radio from 8 p.m. I'm sorry, that's me, 10 p.m. to midnight, and sometimes rolls over up to 1 a.m. in the morning. And without further ado, and then Rex, are you going to be able to stay for a little bit, or do you
got
to go?
I've got 7 more minutes, Robert.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and let Sammy in, but since you only have 7 minutes, if you'd like to promote the Tex and Rex show, that would be great. And I'm going to let Sammy in, and then go ahead, Rex.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. The Tex and Rex show is airing on Blog Talk Radio, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Friday and Saturday. Which is basically the same time slot that Robert broadcasts Bart's Logic Political Talk Sunday through Thursday. And, of course, you can always catch us on the archives. Just search for Tex and Rex on Blog Talk Radio. And the Tex and Rex show is basically irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. So it's more
Amen.
Or less the same focus that Sammy and Robert have. We're talking about Newt Gingrich. We're talking about RNC brokered convention. We're talking about conservative principles and defeating Barack Obama. You just get a lot more Tex and Rex than you would on Robert's or Sammy's show, which might be too much Tex and Rex for a lot of people, but other people seem to like it. So we're there, and we are making the case from now until convention for an open convention, and I will turn it back to you, Robert and Sam.
Robert, we are fighting as Rex and Tex, or Tex and Rex, are doing. We are fighting for a broker convention. They can laugh at us all they want, and they can go put it in their pipe and smoke all they want, but we are not shutting up for Newt Gingrich. And I stand strong. And when I saw Newt almost 4 weeks ago now, he was awesome. He did not say support nor endorse Mitt Romney. So we got a losing. I saw the polls today from Rasmussen. Barack Obama is beating him in the Rasmussen poll. Did you see that? Robert?
I didn't.
You didn't see it? Yeah, no. Barack Obama is beating Mitt Romney by 1 percentage point in the Rasmussen poll. And the Rasmussen polls are one of the most accurate polls out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why is Mitt Romney losing against a loser, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama? Why is he? I mean, he should be 10 points ahead of him.
Exactly.
Yeah. He should be. I mean, look, the unemployment is a, yeah, it's absolutely, Robert's right, it's going to get worse. I mean, the fact is that unemployment is terrible, okay? It's near 20% when you actually look at it. It hasn't improved. He can blame Bush all he wants, but if I recall correctly, Carter handed a terrible situation like that to Ronald Reagan, who didn't blame Carter for it. He simply just rolled up his sleeves and got to work. And by this point in Reagan's first term, unemployment had dropped dramatically. So on that
exactly.
point alone, on that point alone, an alternate choice should be 10 points ahead. But we have to remember that when he was governor, Mitt Romney was able to take Massachusetts to the 47th place in job creation, and three of the states that were behind Massachusetts were just nailed by Hurricane Katrina, if I'm not mistaken. So you think to yourself, there's to be 47th in out of how many states? I think Barack Obama said there's 57 states.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's pretty
the 57
bad.
57
so
Muslim countries.
Yeah. So there's a really bad job creation record there. But nevertheless, if we're buying into this narrative that he's like Mr. Super Capitalist job creator, Staples and Sports Authority and all that stuff, then if that narrative is true or at least believable by the voting public, then you're right. At this stage of the game, Mitt Romney should be considerably ahead, and he's not.
Right. And then
I mean,
all... Go ahead, Sam.
He should be smoking Barack Obama. Barack Obama is a loser. Barack Obama came in there and told us he was going to take our country back. The country handed him almost $1 trillion.
Yeah.
What happened at $1 trillion? It's all blown out the window.
Well, gentlemen, I have on the line here I'd like to bring in. I'm not interrupting you, but gentlemen, we was talking both as far as Logic Political Talk and Sammy's show. Is I believe this is Chris who called in last night with some very valuable information. So at this time, I would like to let him in.
That's me.
This Chris?
Me.
Thank you for
calling
in, sir.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Sir.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, my friend?
Good.
Go ahead, Chris. You've got the floor. And I still have to, because I know Rex would like to, I guess, get a Facebook friend or something like that. You guys connected, and I think that'd be a great idea. So, well, we should probably do that at some point.
Right. I got connected with one of the guys today, and I was still looking for the other one. He had had a bunch of people that were similar, so I hadn't got on that. I've been.
Oh, that's okay.
And
I mean, I could send you a link, or you guys could. Rex is on the line now, right? Rex, you still there?
Yeah, Chris and I are actually connected on Facebook, and I'll connect him with
that,
a text.
Okay.
Great, awesome.
Cool. So it was the other guy. I got a little confused last night. You guys know each other. So, you know, I'm like listening to you guys last night, and I'm like going, which one is talking now? You know?
Don't worry about it, Chris. Robert and Sammy know us, and they still do the same thing. So it's apparently par for the course.
Well, so I have been going nonstop trying to catch up with the whole lawsuit situation, and I – it's kind of an interesting thing, but there's so many details involved in this thing, and trying to tie the lawsuit to past precedent case has gotten complex, and it shouldn't have been, but it has. And one of the reasons it has, I mean, you guys are it's going to blow you away. My paralegal is probably going to scream at me for saying this, but our Constitution does not have a protection clause in it to guarantee our voting. Believe it or not. Now, if you're a minority, yes, but not the rest of us. And I don't mean to sound weird in the way I say that. So there's some complexity here that is occurring in this case, because it's not a constant, it's just not there in black and white. So the lawyer is having to go back, and they were on yesterday from 8:30 till 8:30 in the morning to 7 p.m. last night. And so the lawyer was given a opportunity to refile and literally have to go in and draw out more case laws. You know, they were going nonstop all day to make these ties into the case that shows that something in our laws in our country over the last 250 years guarantees us these rights. I mean, it was and I know that's, I'm not a lawyer, so, you know, you have to give me a little bit of grace with that. But it was shocking to find that out today. So they're running full circle right now, trying to put it all back together. And at least they know what the judge wants to see. That's a good point. But it was an interesting day. I would have liked to have been there. I don't know if I could have understood it all. But that's kind of the update I have right now. And what that means is a refile, same case, correction, so to speak, and then hopefully this all happens before the convention. That's the only glitch, is this getting back in there and those points proven that those delegates have the right to vote their conscience, that it's protected by some law out there, because it isn't necessarily protected in the Constitution, believe it or not.
Well, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are private individual parties, and that's where we got the crap going against us right now.
Well, is there any kind of precedence? I'm sorry, Sammy, go ahead.
But, I mean, we're going to fight for this with every last breath in our body, and if we don't win the lawsuit, we will take it to Tampa, and we will raise hell down there in Tampa.
Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry, Robert.
No, Chris, I was going to mention, I believe it was, I could be wrong, but I thought it was you who said, you know, if Romney was to get the nomination or the lawsuit doesn't go through, we should boycott the convention.
Yeah, you tagged me, didn't you?
I said I didn't know whether that was you or not, but I'm just saying,
yeah.
You know.
Well, and you know, that brings up a good point. And I, you know, I mean, I have been.
And that might have been said tongue in cheek. I mean, on text, you really don't know. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I smiled. I put a smiley face by it.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. And this is something I don't think people really understand. And this is just something, you know, every one of us gathers a lot of information, and any of us who are active on radio or you know, Facebook or whatever we do, you know, you start to build some real deep sense about what the heck is going on. These people do not like us. And I'm talking about the RNC. I'm talking about the GOP elite. I'm talking
yeah.
about the moderates. The moderates and the progressives, they kicked the crap out of the Tea Party after we handed them a majority. And
yeah.
And when you sit back and you look at this stuff, you have to ask yourself, come hell or high water, these people are going to do what they want, and they are going to spend a fortune to make it happen, and they're going to leave us in the dust. And one of the things that I've seen, just me personally, just seeing all the interaction and posts and everything else, is that people keep thinking that if we toe the line and then we'll fix it later, or somehow we'll get it. And that's where that comment came from. I go, you know, I don't think they care if we get it. I don't think they care, because where are we going to go? And that's where that comment came from is, you know, if Romney showed up and half that convention hall was empty on international television, maybe they would get the point. That was what that comment came from on that chat with you and I. You know, because I don't know what else to do. You know, you cannot, yeah. They will stop a floor fight if nobody can get those five state delegates, because they're trying to strip Ron Paul of his last, you know, they had 11. They got him down to like five or six, and they're still arguing over that, and they're trying to strip his delegates in Louisiana, or they actually already have, and that's in a battle right now, and they're going after Maine. If nobody gets that five-state plurality on a nomination, it's Romney is the only man on that name, that on the floor. That is their goal. So outside of an absolute, I can't believe I'm saying this, but outside of an absolute revolt, they ain't going to let it happen. That's just...
Well, no, it's not going to happen. There will be a revolt. I'm telling you that right now. I am pissed off. I am mad. I have nothing to lose.
I think a lot of us feel that way.
All of us
are in that situation. Only some of us are willing to articulate it at this point. But it's an absolute fact.
Yeah,
well,
you guys covered some great stuff. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, two things. One, I think everyone needs to get a hold of their RNC chairperson or the head of the national RNC. Tell them of your disfavor. Tell them that, look, this doesn't happen. We're going, you know, as you said, revolt. We're going to not support the party. I mean, personally, if Mitt Romney becomes the nominee, I very well, and I've been a Republican for 20-some-odd years, I very well may leave the party if Romney becomes the nominee. This could possibly be the last Republican election for me, last election, excuse me, where I'm a Republican. And I've been a Republican all my life.
I will interject this here, Robert. I am Republican in name only, because here in Florida we have closed primaries. So I am Republican in name only. I'm a constitutional conservative, plain and simple.
Well, let me tell you about a situation, just to throw a sidewinder, just so you got, because I see this stuff, because I'm very connected to the Lawyers for Ron Paul site, and I go on there and I try to stay up on all the things that are going on. But, you know, like even in California, the state chairs were calling the delegates saying, don't even show up. It's already a done deal. You're not needed. I mean, I'm telling you, they are pulling every stop out. You cannot fathom what they're doing in the street level, at the caucuses, in the states. This is a really interesting time we live in, and I don't know that I have a solution. I pray to God that this lawsuit gets won and those delegates get protected. But, you know, outside of that, somebody's going to have to figure out some way to stop this.
Well, it's momentum. I mean, the fact is that they can only get away with this if we sit back and allow them to get away with it, because what they're doing is wrong. It's contrary to the rules, and it is contrary to the law, with or without the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, power wins. But see, this is the thing. Power wins because the perception of power is there. Because the very simple fact is, who really has the power? In every situation, whether it is a dictatorship, a monarchy, a socialist democracy, a democratic republic, the people have the power. It is about having the perception of having that power. Most people think that the parties have the power and the politicians have the power, so that's how they act. If they realize that actually you're sovereign and you have the power, then that's where the loss is. And if you look at the actions that are going on, this is the exact same way that we ended up with a unqualified, inexperienced, mm-hmm.
ineligible guy in the White House. Okay, let's understand a few things. When he was senator in Illinois, Barack Obama never ran against an opponent. He had them removed from the ballot through disputing every single signature until there was no one opposing him in his Senate district. And when he was running, when he seemed to come up against opposition, which was with Senator, I think, Ryan, who I'm sure that Robert knows because Senator Ryan's wife is an actress. Her name's Jeri Ryan, and she played Seven of Nine on one of the Star Trek incarnations.
Oh, yeah, I know who Seven of Nine is.
I bet you do.
Yeah, she
wasn't
good to take a look at.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that any guy that's ever seen
an episode. Not as good as DePaul, though. She doesn't beat DePaul, though, let me tell you.
But she apparently was involved with her husband, and there was some issues of inappropriate behavior, and it was exposed, and the guy was basically involved in a scandal and had to basically, step down, and Barack Obama won. So the only race that Barack Obama had to actually campaign to win in was his 2008 first the primary against Hillary Clinton, and that was highly contentious. And then all of a sudden, and I don't want to inspire the blue helmets and black helicopters crowd. However, it is very suspicious that the Bilderbergers were meeting at the Westfield Marriott here in Northern Virginia, which I'm not too far from right now. And then all of a sudden, Hillary Clinton kind of sidesteps, and Barack Obama becomes the guy. Then he had to campaign and win against John McCain.
Well,
other
he
than
really
Sarah Palin being on, what's that?
He didn't really have to campaign against McCain.
No, that's true.
Right.
I want to bring up a real quick point. I just want to bring in something Lugnut said in the chat, because we were talking about polls tonight when we were talking about the Electoral College. And she pointed out to some of the polls lie. They were inflated. They inflated them for Obama and then go down a little to make Romney look good, because they want to keep the narrative. I think, some are trying to do that in order to keep the narrative that it's close, and also the narrative that Romney is indeed the official nominee, which we know that is. But I just want to chime that in with what Lugger.
Can I throw – sorry, Robert.
Let me chime this in here. Who ran against Barack Obama against his U.S. Senate election? It was a black candidate. Can you tell me the name?
In Illinois?
Yeah, in Illinois.
He ran against, I know you're talking about.
Ran against
the name,
J.C. Watt.
That's right.
And the black community came out against him so bad, and it blows me away.
Chris, you're on. I'm sorry. I thought somebody had done good.
No. I'm done. I'm.
Oh, okay. I just didn't want to interrupt. Go ahead, Sam.
No, I got to get off here and get ready for my show. Go eat some dinner real quick and. We'll be back in here at 10 o'clock.
Okay, well, you want to start your show a little bit, Sammy, real quick before you go, or give a little plug in for you?
Don't worry about it. No, the show is spreading like wildfire. And, I'm not going to give the numbers out there for the libtards. And you can go put that in your pipe and smoke it, libtards. And... silver fishes, you can go live in the sea. Enjoy it. All right, well, we'll talk to you on the flip side.
We'll talk to you on the flip side. Take care, Sammy. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. We love y'all.
You too,
nice.
Sammy. Take care, buddy.
Here's what I was going to give you, Robert, and this I've posted this, I don't know, all my people on my groups and people that know me see this all the time, and I say this all the time. You have to defeat a sitting president. All Obama has to do is not lose. So when we talk about, because I saw that, remember we were chatting, and I saw that you were talking about the polls and the Electoral College. and everybody is always this, you know, Romney's right here, he's 2 points up, he's 3 points down, he's da-da-da-da-da-da. This is not beating Obama. And that is so important to understand. And I heard you guys earlier, I was on chat with my paralegal, was you know, it's just like, it's almost like it's all a false narrative, you know, like an impression. It was like the whole thing with Romney through this whole primary was just this concept of inevitability and he's electable and who can beat Obama, and we're screaming, Newt, you know, all the whole journey. And here he is up there just stumbling all over the place. You don't beat a popular guy like him. He may not be popular to us, but he sure is popular to a lot of people. And you don't beat a popular guy, you know, running neck and neck with him. So if they don't have, if these guys don't have something up their sleeve to force Obama to defeat himself, this guy didn't have a chance. I'm sorry, but that's my opinion.
Well, I don't think he has a chance. I don't think Romney has a chance for many reasons, including those that you just mentioned. And also, you know, I mean, history is, I mean, you would think they would learn from history. You would think the RNC would learn from history, because there has not been a moderate Republican, you know, that has won in a general election in 40 years. You'd think they'd learn from history, and they're supposed to be so much smarter than we are. You know, but they don't. But I think they really thought that, because people fear Obama so much, and Obama's done such a horrible job, that they could finally get a moderate candidate, you know, to win the nomination, and possibly, they thought, to win the presidency, so they could finally go to the conservatives and, frankly, I would think the libertarians as well in the party and say, you know what, we don't need you anymore. We've proved it, because now we could show, we proved it, because now we have a moderate, and some dare say a progressive, which is actually a word that came straight from Romney's mouth, that his views are progressive, in the White House, and they can totally marginalize the conservatives and the libertarians of the party.
I guarantee you that's their goal.
Well, of course, it's their goal, and they can try to do it, but here's the problem. You don't get to marginalize us, because the fact is the only thing that they can do is find a new home for us. We're not going anywhere. We're not going to be quiet. We're not going to stop. So the very simple fact is either you embrace us, and what I mean by us is us conservatives, Tea Party, and us libertarians, Campaign for Liberty. You either embrace us or we're going to find a new home. I guarantee you, if this party does not get its head out of its nether region and embrace the Ron Paul Campaign for Liberty and the Young Republican Libertarian Movement, those guys are going to jump ship, and there's going to be a lot of them. And believe it or not, they're likely to take a lot of regular Republicans, especially Tea Party people, with them. And like you said, Chris, 34% is a win.
Yep.
You know, I'm not saying that would necessarily happen this time, and I'm certainly not advocating for a third party. I think that the future lies in the GOP. But if they do manage to convince themselves that they've succeeded by marginalizing us, the only thing that they're going to do is have us find a new home. They're going to marginalize themselves.
Well, exactly.
You're right on. Yeah.
An illustration I like to use is, imagine an elephant. And the elephant is kind of in half. You have the moderates and the rhinos. Well, I don't want to use rhinos, they'll destroy the picture. But the illustration. But you have the moderates on top, okay, on the top half of the elephant. And on the bottom half, you have the conservatives. Well, what is on the bottom half of an elephant, as all animals? The leg, the feet, the instruments that carry the elephant. So without the conservatives, and probably also, as I've been, include libertarians, without them, who are the boots on the ground, the people who donate, the people who wear the buttons, put the signs in their yard, make the phone call, without them, the Republican Party will not move. So if you chop off the legs of an elephant, what's it going to do? It's going to fall. It's going to crash. And then what's it going to be? It's going to be eaten by the lion. It's going to be eaten by the hyena. And that's what's going to happen to the Republican Party if they decide that they think that they can get away with chopping off the leg of this elephant. And
good,
I think that's what's going to happen.
That's a good point. Here's the question, and I and it's Rex, right, on the other?
Yep, I'm here. Yep,
okay,
right.
Sorry. I'm still getting to know you guys. But
that's okay.
We were going around about this last night, and I hear you sound a lot like I do, that in essence that, you know, the Republican Party is key. But I really believe it's going to hit a point if things happen at the convention on the left, you know, on the flip side. There's two sides of the coin that can happen here. There can be a revolt and something miraculous can happen. I believe in those things. But if it goes the other direction, that's going to be where those conversations are going to have to be held, you know, where we have to sit down and go, whoa, you know, we are either, you know, because if the RNC pulls this off, they will never stop because they've just been empowered. They, you know, we were talking about this. They believe they can do anything they want. I think you're dealing with an age in this country, I really believe this, that there is a totalitarian mindset, and all we are is numbers and workforces and taxable, you know, energy out there. And that's how they're treating us in the party. It's how they treated the Tea Party. It's how they treated the conservatives, and, you know, it's how they treated the Paul movement for the last two primaries. Something's got to change, you know.
Well, yeah,
yep.
It's as if the president is the new king. The politicians are the oligarchy, and the American people have become their serfs. I think that's how they view the American people. Not all of them, certainly not a Ron Paul or a Newt Gingrich, you know. But I think those, especially like Romney, I think that's very well how they see the American people.
Yep.
To serve them.
No, you're absolutely true. They are the philosopher kings of Plato's Republic, and we simply don't have the capacity to do what they do. But the simple fact is most of those guys are elected morons. They're elected idiots. They're not truly capable of leadership, and they certainly don't have the right outlook. Not all of them. Some of them are quite smart, and some of them are quite capable, but a majority of them have failed upwards into these positions and then just retained power. And as far as will there be a change, that's inevitable. I mean, let's deal with certainties here. What we certainly know is that this brokered convention, this open convention that's happening August 26th, is going to change everything, okay? It's going to change everything. The only question is it going to change in the sense that the true power of the people and the autonomy of the delegates is going to nominate the best candidate, or is it going to be selected according to acclamation by our masters, in which case the change is going to be this will be the last RNC convention that nominates anybody that has any prominence whatsoever, because next time round, they'll be the third party.
I agree with that one.
So the change is coming. It's inevitable. It is going to be there. I would prefer that the change be within the form, within the GOP, but if they don't do that, the change is going to be outside of the form, and it's going to be very, very uncomfortable, because change usually is, but it's also going to be quite jarring. And so, you know, that's on their heads. You know, if we leave the party, if Campaign for Liberty goes to the Libertarians, or they write in Ron Paul, when Romney loses, if they nominate him, they're going to try to blame us.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact is, it's their fault. And the fact is that anybody that stays in this party or supports this party, if they do that, had better be on board with their Keynesian agenda, because otherwise you're supporting your own demise. Right now we're not supporting our own demise because we still got to fight, and we're going to win this fight in 19 days. But if they happen to pull out an illicit victory, then you got to burn it down and you got to walk away and you got to build somewhere else, because these people are then just letting you know that you don't matter. You're just a peon that does what you're told. And if you're comfortable with that, I don't really know how American you are.
Go
ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say real quick, they're really not going to leave us a choice if Romney would get the nomination, because Romney being the nominee, the Republican Party You just made it, in my opinion, a one-party system.
Yep.
And you, in order to not have that one-party system, you're going to have to create another party to do it. And I'm not saying this time around, because I don't think a third party would be successful because it doesn't have the organization. But you give that organization another 4 years for 2016, I think it very well could. Because back when Perot ran the very first time, I mean, I regret that, I'm almost embarrassed to say that I can't recall what percent that he got in the first time he ran. But then he get like 16%. What's that?
Yeah, 15, 16%.
Okay, that's
like
what
that.
I thought he got 16%. Okay. He got 16% of the vote, which, if you only need 34, Ross Perot was not running for 4 years. But if a third party develops and you have a strong candidate for, you know, or a strong, you know, really a candidate for the or head of that party, of that new third party, and they build the organization to run against the other two parties in 2016, I can very well see if Ross Perot in 1 year can get 16%, you know, in one election season, get 16%, then I can very well see in 4 years a third party such as the Constitutional or Libertarian Party, something like that, or some kind of mix or hybrid, getting 34% in 4 years.
And Robert, it's actually... It's more possible now. Remember when Ross Perot was running, he did talk about the fact that this country needed a third party a long time ago, but that the infrastructure and the technology to compete in a one party, two wings oligarchy was not there, but he believed that it was there in the early 90s, and it sort of was in a rudimentary fashion. But now you've got Twitter, Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. You know, the communication speed is at such a level that the media does not have a monopoly on the dissemination of information.
Right.
It does have a lock on it to those who stay plugged into the matrix. But for those of us that have taken the red pill, you can get the real information at your fingertips faster than ever. So it's there, and it can happen. It's a matter of getting the rest of these people unplugged from that cable box matrix and letting them get the information. Now, I'm not saying that you get the information crystal clear, because there's a lot of misinformation out there for intentional purposes and just by misguided people. But if you've got something by which to measure it, a set of principles, you can read between the lines and sift through a lot of that stuff. But the fact is that it's there. Yeah, it's there. You can get your hands on it, and then you think about it. Like you look at us. You know, we're doing research all day. We're looking at YouTube clips. We're reading articles. We're hitting certain Facebook pages. Maybe some of them are similar. Some of them are quite different. And then we get on this show, and we're distilling that for everybody who's listening. You know, and we're not telling them what to think. We're telling them what we think, and we're telling them what we've learned. And then they go and verify the information and draw their own conclusions. But the fact is that a third party could very easily rise up by 2016, assuming that, you know, Barack Obama doesn't manage to single-handedly destroy this country. I think that if he does, you're talking about a revolution that will happen before 2016. So I'm more optimistic than that. I don't think that disaster scenario is coming, but it's a possibility. But I think
it's even more of a possibility with the Romney nomination.
Well, exactly. So if they do that... don't be surprised if you don't see the rise of the third party in this election. Now, could a quote third party candidate win? Yes, it is possible. Is it likely? No, too many people are plugged into the matrix. But if someone comes out of somewhere, and whether it's Gary Johnson, which I don't see that happening, but perhaps, you know, some of the Republicans who are prominent and go, you know what, the future of this party is done. I mean, you know, some of the real true Tea Party leadership would be like, you know what, let's just go ahead and build another one. And they do it. Maybe they score 16, 20%. Well, that's a serious springboard for 2016. And it means that the GOP will be non-existent by 2016, and they would have marginalized themselves by turning themselves into a third party.
I honestly, you know, you said some great stuff there, and I honestly cannot fathom how they thought, especially with the Paul movement, that they could get away with this without dire consequences. You know, because I'm trying, I'm talking about like the RNC, you know, what you were talking about earlier. Something's mm-hmm. going to change. When I looked at the I'm still trying to get a handle on the total numbers of how big the Paul movement is in the Republican Party, but you take off the ticked off conservatives, Tea Party, social conservatives, and the Pauls movement, that's got to be some serious numbers. And with Ron Paul, you know, getting up there in years, getting ready to retire and all that kind of stuff, this group is going to be looking, you know, is going to open their eyes and say, okay, you know, especially with what Rand did. There's a lot of them very extremely unhappy with Rand.
So
inside that world, you know, this is our opportunity as conservatives, and I talked about that last night. I'm actually working on, and I saw that on your, you have a site too, Rex, where you're opening that door to that conservative, libertarian, let's have a conversation and let's get together and work out our differences, you know, because I'm working on the same thing. And I believe this is going to be huge in terms of what is going to be accomplished regardless of what happens at the convention, because they will, even if we whoop their rear ends and, you know, and Paul or Newt or Palin or whatever happens, even if we whip their rear ends, they're not going to stop, because the people behind Romney and the RNC and Obama and the DNC are the same people, and they're very, very wealthy and very power hungry. And if we whoop them this time, they're going to come back and do it again.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And here's the thing, and I'm starting to realize this. There are some who are committed, principled libertarians that just can't look at conservatives, and there are some conservatives that think that libertarians are all just, you know, anarchists, so they can't look at them. But that's the fringe. And usually the extremes of the fringes are the loudest, so that's what you paint the brush of everybody else with. But the bulk of libertarians and the bulk of conservatives are not on those extremes. We have a far more open-minded view. What happens is that you let these extremes and you let the media paint your friend, your ally, with a brush that alienates you. And that's what we have to break down, those barriers, because this is, you know, do we have debates? Sure. You know, maybe one election cycle it leans more libertarian, the next one it leans more conservative. You know, hey, that's a fine pendulum to swing. It's within a zone that is framed within the Constitution, unlike the zone we have right now where it swings further and further to the left and it's not even near the Constitution. The simple fact is, if we don't make this broker convention happen, if you don't communicate with your delegates by Twitter, Facebook, phone call, personal letter, personal contact, whatever, if you don't do that now and we don't get this open convention, I can assure you who the winner of the next presidential election will be. It'll be Goldman Sachs.
Yes.
Because Goldman Sachs owns Barack Obama and Goldman Sachs owns Mitt Romney.
Well, I read somewhere that the same, or pretty much the same donors who supported Obama in 2008 are supporting Romney in 2012.
Yep.
Well, remember that this is Wall Street financing here. So one of the ways that you avoid risk, which is, everybody thinks speculators and investors are looking for risk in order to get a reward. No, they're looking for a sure thing. And one of the ways that you manage that is in the derivatives market, where you use hedging. And, you know, there are various different call and put strategies and hedging strategies that you can use where you're going to profit, maybe not as much one way as you do the other, but you will profit in any transaction, whether the market is up, down, or flat. And so that's how these Wall Street guys look at the world. So they're hedging by owning both candidates. Now, they might be hedging more towards Barack Obama, so it won't be as profitable if Mitt Romney wins, but it'll still be profitable. So they're hedging so that either way, whichever way this goes, as long as it's these two morons running against each other and pretending to have a fight, Goldman Sachs wins.
You know what? They're playing. I mean, I have never seen, you know, when I look at I try to stay away from the news of the day because it just bores me and it irritates me. But Obama does this, Romney says that. Romney says this, Obama does that. And I'm just like, Are you kidding me? This is the best we have? You know, they're just playing with each other.
Well, you know, and I brought up a point where, you know, I believe that we have not had a candidate to be president of the United States which has, you know, the experience, the intellect, the wherewithal to get what needs to be done for the United States as much as we do now in Newt Gingrich. You know, I mean, I'm a Newt Gingrich supporter, always have been. I mean, I like Ron, you know, a lot of what Ron Paul says. Some of the stuff I don't, but I mean, if I might pick between Ron Paul and Mitt Romney, I'd pick Ron Paul every day.
Yes.
But Newt Gingrich is my candidate. And I think if the United States, because of the Republican rhinos, think about this, because of the establishment in the rhinos and the Republican Party, for them to take away the opportunity from America to have what's probably one of the best presidents, the most experienced, the boldest, the ideas, the vision, you know, probably since Ronald Reagan, and to let that opportunity pass, I mean, in my mind, is just a travesty, a tragedy as well for this nation. And just the thought of that, the possibility of us not having a Newt Gingrich for president and instead having, but you gentlemen point out, these two yahoos. And that's probably not a good description, but you know what I mean. You know, it's just, unbelievable.
Yep.
Unbelievable. I mean, if you look at the resume between all three of those, you know, of those three men, okay? Look at the resume of Newt Gingrich, and if we're going to be hiring somebody, because they want to use business terms a lot because when they talk about Mitt Romney, if we're going to hire somebody, I mean, take Obama's resume, take Romney's resume, and take Newt's resume. Well, who's the most qualified for the job? By far, Newt Gingrich. You know, the thought of that not being the possibility, of that, you know, not happening, the possibility it leaves me tongue-tied.
You know what the key is to explain that? Because it is just stunning sometimes when you think about how ridiculous it is. We look at him as the most qualified to do what we expect a president to do based on our belief in the Constitution in this great country. They look at him as the biggest threat because he threatens their power control. These people are buying off our senators and representatives and our leaders left and right. Well, they bought them off years ago. I've asked this question. I said this last night. I've asked this question over and over and over again. Every time somebody post the Obama, crisis of the day. Obama did this, Obama did that, Obama did this, Obama did that. And I always come back with the same people are probably sick of me. I go, and what are the Republicans doing about it? That's a question that nobody seems to want to answer because they're doing nothing. I'm sorry, but John Boehner, I have no clue what he's doing in there in a leadership position.
He's talking conservative and doing nothing, which is what he was supposed to be doing in the first place.
Yeah.
Isn't he one of the guys?
Isn't he one of the guys that tried to take Newt out?
He's one of the guys who did take Newt out. I mean, you know, they did succeed in their coup. They succeeded in their coup, and then they went on a spending spree that brought us 2006 and 2008. It's their fault. You can lay it at their feet. You know, there's just absolutely no other reason for it. But you're absolutely right. We have this conversation from our perspective, and our perspective, like you said, is the Constitution and this great country. Their perspective is how do we extract power and profit? And in that regard, you're absolutely right. The two biggest threats to them are Newt Gingrich, because he's done it to four, and Ron Paul, because he's inspired people to actually go, hey, you know what, this Constitution thing, this isn't just a piece of paper. It's the supreme law of the land. If it doesn't fit in here, you can't do it, no matter what the Supreme Court says. Remember something, the Supreme Court is not the ultimate arbiter of interpreting the Constitution. It's only the interpreter of the Constitution vis-a-vis the other two federal branches, okay?
That's right.
And the states and the people are the ultimate arbiters of what is and is not constitutional. And as far as, you know, did Roberts make a good decision, a bad decision about the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act? It almost doesn't matter because if all of these attorney generals who allegedly were suing the Obama administration, actually those state legislatures were to nullify the law, the Supreme Court can't do anything about it, and neither can Congress. It stops being law.
So that's something
that
to think about.
It was very good.
But listen, gentlemen, I have to pop off, so continue the conversation, and I'll catch up with you guys on Sammy's. And Robert, thank you for having me on.
Okay, and real quick, Rex, I need to call you on a matter before you go, right after the show, right after 10 p.m., I need to call you on a matter. It shouldn't take too long, but it's something that needs to be discussed.
Well, that's what I figured. So get a hold of me as soon as you wrap up.
I will. Thanks, Rex.
Thanks,
Rex.
And
you have a great night. We'll talk to you later.
All right, guys. Bye.
See you. All right, Chris, go ahead. When do you think the next time you'll hear any kind of updates on the lawsuit?
Well, I've heard a lot that I can't even talk about because it's so complex. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I would say in the next day or two we should have all of the refiling done that is required by the court, and that information. I don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but I guarantee you this guy is sweating blood to get this done. You know, it was amazing to me, absolutely stunning, when I found out that our Constitution doesn't even guarantee our voting rights.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I know, you know, they went in there with all this information and all these case laws.
The Voting Rights Act, right.
Yeah, the Voting Rights Act of 71, 85, all this different, you know, these 1,000 people and their testimonies, and they're like, well, you know, there's nothing really here to guarantee anything. I mean, that was kind of an interesting perspective, because if that is something that absolutely will have to be addressed on a constitutional level.
Wow, that's incredible. Real quick, while I'm thinking about it, would it be, I mean, I'm sure your legal aid is very busy. Would it be a possibility for her to come on and talk to us about this at some point, or would that be something that
was
possible?
We were chatting as I was on this show, and she goes, "You're going to get me on that show, aren't you?" Like, you know, don't you dare.
Well, I would like to. If she'd be willing, that'd be great. If not, that's fine. I understand. You know, no hard feelings. But it would be phenomenal to have her on, I'm sure.
Yeah, she's pretty sharp, and it was just, you know, I have no idea how she ended up on my group site, but talk about a godsend, you know, somebody that has a level head and, you know, paralegal background.
And would you like to tell us a little bit more about the site?
Which one?
The one you were just saying that she's on your site and.
Oh, it's just I put together. It's just, you know, it's just a Facebook group, I pulled people that wanted to pursue. You know where it came from was back what we were talking about last night in the different shows, and also what, you know, I see Rex and Tex are on this too, is I just was like, man, this Ron Paul movement is really big, but nobody talks about it. Nobody will, you know, there's no information. And I started doing research on it, and I wanted to be able to discuss it without being called a Paul bot. You know, Paul bought all day long by my fellow newt people. So I built a group.
Built
a group saying, let's talk about this stuff, you know.
Right. And I know a lot of people who were newt supporters who have gotten upset thinking that the concentration and the focus has been taken off of newt and put on the Ron Paul. And that's certainly not the case, because one thing that I've realized that without Ron Paul, there's not even a chance of for Newt Gingrich to, I mean, I wouldn't say any chance whatsoever, but it really slims down the chances of a broker convention and Newt Gingrich gaining the nomination without the input of what the Ron Paul people are doing.
Yeah, and I said that to people too. You know, I used to have to tag every post that I put up just so I wouldn't be attacked by people who have seen 15,000 of my posts and know I'm a Newt guy. That this is not a Ron Paul endorsement, but this is important. I got tired of doing that, you know.
I've been called an Obama supporter before, and I've never been called a Ron bot because, you know, I haven't done as much stuff, but I have said, look, you know, if we can come on board, you know, if the Paul people and the Gingrich people could work together, you know, to stop Romney, then, you know, the friend of my, you know, the friend of my enemy is my friend.
Well,
you know,
and Rex, I'm sorry, Rex or Tex said it last night. very clearly. You know, there are conservative libertarians, and then there's the libertarian libertarian. You know, just like we have, you know, what I think most of us new conservatives are really moderate conservatives, because you got the right wing over there that want the Pope in office, you know, to dictate morality. And I don't think most of us new people are that, you know, are kind of like, I don't want the federal government telling me about my religion. You know, that's a community issue. So I think we're a little bit more moderate in that area. So you have this, you know, this whole, you know, spectrum of people. And what I learned, and I battled the Paul bots, you know, the crazy little goofballs that jumped all over the site and said stupid things, you know, and like Newt was an alien, and you know what I'm saying? And they're there. But I can tell you right now, on Lawyers for Ron Paul, it's just like talking to you and me right now. You know, so I, in that research, in that time, when I was trying to figure out what was going on with this Paul movement and why it was being stifled, and the guy was filling coliseums and stadiums at you know, like Texas A&M and, you know, that kind of stuff, I'm going, why is this getting stifled? See, I've always had this attitude, tell us the truth, Romney, and then let us decide. Just be honest. You know, I used to say that to his people. They'd come on and, you know, work the sites. And I'd say, you know, if you weren't lying all the time and trying to subvert, just be honest. And I think that in the core of all of the Republicans, that they're, I believe that majority is there. And we just got to get them all together. You know, whether it
right,
be some
exactly.
You know? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, we got, and unfortunately, so many of them are still watching and believing what they're hearing from, you know, Fox News and, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, and they're believing all this stuff about Romney, and oh my gosh, how he's conservative, and how he's, you know, he's going to create all these jobs, he's got all this business experience, you know, it's like, you know, they're just fed the, you know, spoon-fed this, and in part, of course, it's, you know, they have to take personal responsibility, but also they put their trust and these so-called conservative news outlets, and these guys are taking that trust and betraying that trust, you know, because they know that they know their audience, you know, believes that, okay, well, if it's coming out of Fox News or Rush Limbaugh or, you know, Glenn Beck's mouth, it's got to be conservative.
I think they damaged themselves this time, though, Robert.
They have. I know. Yeah.
I believe that.
Good.
Go ahead. Well, see, for me,
I think they lost 17% to 20% of their viewership. You know,
sure, but I also believe because of our postings through this whole primary that we, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of anger against Rush, against Levin, against Beck. you know, all of this stuff, and that information can't be stopped. Now, maybe it's not getting to everybody yet, you know, like Rex talks about, you know, people unplugging people from the Matrix, which, you know, he's a character. But really what you're dealing with here is, you know, the Internet has given us a new platform. And I believe between now, I don't know what's going to happen between now and the convention, but I believe between now and the convention into the election that there's going to be a lot of new coalitions built. And I've said this 100 times or 1,000 times. Conservatives beat themselves this time. You know, if we were as unified as the Paul movement, there's no way Romney would have made it this far.
No, and I'd have to agree with that. I'd have to agree with that. You know, I think one of the things people could do, because you know, people want to know, like, hey, what can I do to, you know, to help the cause? Is unfortunately, you know, both Rush and, you know, like Sean Hannity, they have big audiences. But you know what? Let's use their big audiences, you know, to our advantage. And so what I mean is have the people listening to this show, both live and on the archives, okay, call those shows up and talk about broker conventions. Now, if only a couple people call, you'll just get ignored. But if you get a whole bunch of people calling them, just inundating their phone lines with calls about the, you know, a broker convention, either one, they're going to have to answer it, or two, they're going to have a very, you know, one-sided show with only having the host talk all the time. And that actually has happened with me one time calling into the Rush Limbaugh show, which, yeah, I won't go into all the details. I'll take up the rest of the time here. tonight, and I will do that. Let's just say that the message I was trying to get out was ignored. But to make a long story short, the message was ignored, but that day, Rush Limbaugh only took two callers the entire 3 hours he was on, which, as anyone here who still is or was a Rush Limbaugh listener, that's almost unprecedented. They only take two calls the entire time. Okay, but I think that there were so many people calling that day that he wasn't taking their call. And I'll get into details on another show, not tonight, but I've got Chris here, and I don't want to take the rest of the time with that discussion. So go ahead, Chris.
You know something I think that people, from my perspective, looking at this whole primary, I, like a lot of people, when Sarah Palin came on board, I got excited because I'm half my life in Alaska. My wife, kids born and raised in Alaska. And I was pretty fired up. McCain didn't do much for me, but she fired me up because I know that hardcore community, fighter. She went in there and got people fired in her own party for corruption. Yeah, she's amazing. And so what happened is everybody got fired up and then we lost. And then the Tea Party rose up and people got excited again. I believe what happened is people thought the Tea Party was a permanent fixture. And they didn't realize how hard the elites, the RNC, the crooks, whatever you want to call them, were going to fight against the Tea Party. And I think people dropped their guard again. I really believe that.
But, one thing that people didn't know a lot of is Rick Santorum did not like the Tea Party.
No, I've posted that video 1,000 times.
Yeah, so here this guy's supposed to be the conservative. Now, I liked what he said was about some of the social, conservative issues, but for them to say, oh, he's Tea Party, he's fought against the Tea Party.
My blood pressure went to the roof when he did that ad up in the Midwest. He was the Tea Party favorite.
And let me, speaking of Rush Limbaugh and Rick Santorum, if people would give me just 1 minute, and actually I think, because I want to play a clip here of something. It's only 27 seconds long, so if you would indulge me. This will give you an example about how Rush Limbaugh was instrumental in the Florida campaign of actually hurting Newt Gingrich. Not the Florida campaign, I mean the Florida primary.
By the way, folks, just I have to remind you again that Gingrich debated John Kerry on global warming at one point, and they agreed on practically every point. Nobody is innocent. Everybody is guilty of some transgression at somewhere against conservatism, except Santorum. See you tomorrow.
What?
That's Rush Limbaugh's very own words. And he said
I never heard that clip.
He said that on the day. His show ended after that. You heard that part. He said that on the very day of the Florida primary.
Mm-hmm.
He said that on the day of the Florida primary.
Yeah. I never heard that clip. I'm glad you played that for me. I used to post that clip all the time that Rush said Newt Gingrich is the only man ever to cut government. I used to play that all the time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. So now he throws Newt under the bus because by that time the rhinos and the establishment and the RNC got to Rush Limbaugh. And I was like, oh, man, I got to play their game. You know what I mean?
You know what I've learned, Robert? You know what I've learned in this process? The depth of involvement. I really didn't know who Romney was. We heard a little bit about him in the last primary. He was there, blip on the screen, and gone. But through this primary and the research I've done, the things that I've seen, this guy's business connections are everywhere. Everything from Clear Channel, which owns the networks these guys are on. I don't think we'll ever get all the connections, that this guy has. Tremendous amount of power.
Oh, definitely. And I think, yeah, I think that the presidency is just something that he wants to hang on his mantle.
Yeah.
And some people even contend, and I don't speculate much or even discuss much about, you know, the Mormon issues, but I know in the Mormon religion, you know, the higher you can get up, the more powerful that you get in life actually affects, you know, can affect
mm-hmm.
what happens to you in your afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You get your own planet or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
get your own planet to roll over, which, you know, hey, that kind of sounds cool to me, you know, but I mean, still, that, you know, if that's going to be the reason why to be the President of the United States, so it's not, in my opinion, a very good reason, because the President of the United States isn't supposed to be a king. The President of the United States is supposed to be the ultimate servant to the United
that's
States.
That's right.
And in my opinion, because the United States, okay, is the world leader, okay, then that person, while, when you hear the term leader of the free world, if you think about it, is also the servant of the free world.
That's right.
You know, and do we want someone who wants to be the servant for the United States or the king of the United States? And I think Newt Gingrich, or even Ron Paul, is humble enough to be that servant for the people. And I don't think Romney is. Romney would love to serve him.
I've said this on, you know, these little posts flash into my mind as you're talking, but I've said this many, many times. Newt wants to save our country. Romney wants to be the president.
Right.
You know what
exactly.
I'm saying? It's like, what does he really, really, really want from this? You know, Newt is trying to bring his whole life. And I believe that about Ron Paul, too. I believe Ron Paul is dedicated to an idea, you know, an ideology, the Constitution, liberty, freedom. I really believe that. I don't think Ron Paul is a power-hungry guy at all. He's kind of a meek man in a lot of ways. You know, he's not very bold and dynamic. You know, he's just kind of a guy. And I believe that he's doing what he believes is right. I believe that Newt is doing what he believes is right. I believe that Romney is doing what he thinks is smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just had to take a moment out there to kick someone out of the chat. And that person calls himself Tea Party Paul. And he called in the Sammy's show last night. And what this person tries to do, and I think you were there, Chris,
yep.
is he tries to disrupt the conversation and the discussion. And that is something I will not allow on this show. And it's not about I'm not open to debate. I am open to debate. That's actually one of the things that I welcome at this show, is open debate. Not many people call in to do that. And that, you know, but when he doesn't come into debate. He comes in to disrupt. And so that's something I will not allow, neither, you know, in the chat nor in someone calling. So, but anyway, I'm looking at the time which is left, and I'm running down for the next couple minutes. So I want to thank you very much, Chris, for coming in and talk tonight. And
well,
you can get that paralee of yours to call in. That would be phenomenal. So
I'll talk
be
to
great.
Her. I'll talk to her in the morning. All right, buddy. Thanks.
Great. Thanks. Take care and have a good night. And I also want to thank Sammy for calling in and for Rex and for everyone who's coming to the chat and for the people coming in and listening to the archive. Thank you very much. And thank you for everyone who's participated in the chat. Thank you, Lugnut, for your contributions as well. And I will leave everyone with the closing song, which I love to play. And good night and take care. And we'll be good to see you again. Thank you.